Aloha, friends. Welcome back to Heartbeat Narratives. I'm Molly, your host, and today's guest is a really special person that I met earlier this spring. She's a fellow podcaster of La Vida Más Chévere de Child Free Latinas. I hope I pronounced that right.
You did. You got it.
She's very involved with Latinas in podcasting, and I was so glad that we touched base one-on-one because I realized that we would have a lot to talk about what makes our heart beat. So today's guest is Paulette Irado. Thank you for coming, Paulette.
Thank you for inviting me, Molly.
To kick it off, where are you calling from? Where is home?
Home is in Los Angeles, born and raised. Moved a few times out of California and just keep returning home. So this is where I belong.
It's good to see you again on virtual video.
No kidding. This is how we always interacted throughout our cohort, right?
Yeah, it's funny because through Air Media and the Amplify cohort, we got to meet, I think it was 14 other up-and-coming podcasters across the continental U.S. and Hawaii. I feel lucky that I got to meet you because it like opened up my world to Latinas in podcasting and Would you be able to talk a bit about your podcast and how it has evolved over the years?
Sure. And what's funny is we are recording this on International Child-Free Day, which is not something that is very well known. And in fact, I just learned about it a couple of years ago myself. But La Vida Más Chévere, the Child-Free Latinas, is the Spanish part is a Puerto Ricanism, if I can't explain that. And what I mean by that is that even though it is Spanish, the word chévere is not widely used in the Spanish-speaking world outside of a few key places, I believe Colombia, parts of Central America, and then the Caribbean. So chévere comes from the Caribbean, and loosely translated, it means the chill, cool life. So I grew up with my aunt and uncle, who were also Puerto Rican on my father's side. They were the only other Puerto Ricans in my world when I was a child growing up in Los Angeles. And my uncle used to drop the word chévere all the time. So when I rebranded my show to focus more on designing your best life, which is really what it's about for child-free Latinas, the word chévere just kind of hit me like smack in the face. And I was like, we're going to call this La Vida Más Chévere. So the podcast is for everyone. You do not have to be child-free to listen. You don't have to be Latina to listen. It's really about recognizing all of these cultural norms we take for granted and re-examining whether or not they make sense for us. So, for example, being child-free is kind of seen as taboo, non-traditional, maybe a little weird. A lot of people don't understand why you wouldn't want children. And I'm sitting here trying to tell you that maybe we should examine if everybody who's had children actively made that choice or just felt like they had to, you know, keep up with the Joneses, the American dream, whatever. Something to think about.
How did you start the podcast? What inspired that spark within you?
Wow. So that's a longer story, but I will keep it nice and tight for your audience. It didn't originally start there. Where it started was, you mentioned my last name's Irado. Irado is a Greek muse. That was the name of a Greek muse. And I woke up one day when we were still kind of in that whole lockdown time of year or time of our lives and just felt like this desire, this like calling to try to convince everyone that we are all creative, that you don't have to be an artist or a professional to tap into that part of yourself you probably haven't seen since childhood. And lock into your creative spirit. So that's where the podcast started, as a way to help people rediscover their creative spark. And after my first season, I decided I wanted to interview people because I did 12 episodes and didn't interview anyone. I was just kind of trying to give wisdom to the world. Then I decided I knew that my demographic was child-free Latinas. That's who I wanted to talk to. So I said, for the second season, I'll pivot and we'll talk with other creative child-free Latinas about where they are in their lives from all ages and all backgrounds. And just as an example for the rest of the world to see that you can choose a non-traditional route and still be successful, still be happy, and still thrive. So after those 12 episodes aired, I was at a podcasting conference a few months after, and I was trying to explain how the Maker Muse related to the stories of child-free Latinas, and it didn't make any sense even to me. So you can imagine the people I'm talking to were utterly confused. So through the help of some podcasting friends and mentors, I changed the name to La Vida Más Chévere, and now it's about, yes, celebrating non-traditional choices, like being a child-free Latina. Those are who my guests are. But it's also about making sure we vote in our best interests, making sure we still feel empowered to have a voice, making sure that we know we have nothing left to lose at this point. So that's what this year's episodes have been about.
I feel like it's very much aligned with your purpose. All of your creative energy has been funneled into this platform where you're uplifting voices that may not otherwise be heard or recognized. And I admire that. And when I think about, you know, that creative feminine energy and like where do we find that internal spark? What lights us up? I think that was really the root of Heartbeat Narratives, was what is it that each of us are doing to put our best selves out into the world? And what are those things that really support us in that practice? So for you, the question of the podcast is, what makes your heartbeat, Paulette?
Like you mentioned, I really love uplifting voices that wouldn't otherwise be heard. That's the entire purpose of this podcast, to make us look at things differently and make us listen to people that otherwise we may not. So as part of that, I created Latinas in Podcasting, which you mentioned, and that is a community of women and allies who have also felt marginalized and unseen. And our whole community is about connection and collaboration, much like our program where we met, our Air Media program, the New Voices cohort. What really lights me up is helping people connect and collaborate. When I meet someone and they tell me what they do, I always try to think, who else do I know that I can connect them to? Or do you know such and such? And that's one of my favorite things to do. You can ask any of my members. If we've ever met, one of the first questions I ask them is, do you know XYZ? Or can I introduce you to XYZ? It's just because that's not only how one grows their own network. You know, obviously, I benefit from that as well. But also how we spread our influence. I believe anything that lifts one of us up lifts all of us up. And that's all I want to see. I want my team to win. And if you're on my team, I want to support you in winning. So really, it's about helping people, removing the gatekeeping from podcasting specifically, but also, and this is the like signature talk I'm working on, just being nice to yourself, which is something that is very easy to say, but difficult to do. Because most of us hear something inside of our head, whether that's a voice or music or colors or, you know, however people interpret the things they hear in their head. And usually that voice or that memory comes from when we were very young, but it stays in there and it becomes our guide through life. It becomes almost our moral compass. And if that voice or that memory is not kind, then we tend to shrink and we tend to be fearful. And the truth is, almost everyone has this. Like, you come out of the box with a negative bias as a human being. Like, that's just how you're built. But you can learn. It's just a skill, just like swimming, just like walking. These are just skills you picked up along the way. You can learn to be nice to yourself. And then that kindness can radiate out to others around you. And it's not about performing kindness. It's about literally tapping it. Again, we're tapping into that part of ourselves that we know is in there that wants to support. I call her the inner cheerleader, but quite honestly, you can call her whatever you want. Maybe your voice isn't even a woman. Maybe it isn't even human. The Navy SEALs train like this. When military people talk about mental toughness and mental grit, What do you think is going on inside that head? Do you think they have someone yelling at them, telling them, oh no, this is scary, we're going to die? No, they can't afford those kinds of thoughts. They don't have room in there. Because if they give in to the fear and the not being able to move forward on a mission, that can be devastating for everyone involved, right? So you and me sitting in the comfort of our homes, we can do this too. We can learn to do this without the pressure of a military combat mission. Mm-hmm. So when people talk about mental grit and mental toughness, it's because they have got this skill. They have developed this skill that all of us can also develop to not only be nice to themselves, but to be supportive and encouraging. And courage isn't letting go of fear. Courage is making space next to the fear to continue moving forward. And so even at this day and age, I'm still afraid of things. I still feel the imposter syndrome come up. And I've learned to realize that when I'm feeling less than, when I'm feeling like I'm not qualified, one, stop it. But two, that means I'm ready to level up. It's like all of a sudden, now you're ready. And what's funny is sometimes in my podcast, I refer back to the gym. I love to lift weights. And I go to the gym. I call it going to church, the Church of the Iron Gods, if you've ever watched Game mm-hmm. of Thrones. That's my quiet place. That's my happy place. I dedicated a whole episode to how that's my happy place. And when you go in, you don't have room in the rest of your head and in your head to do anything but focus on moving the weights. Because if you flinch, if you lose focus, you could hurt yourself. And when I'm trying to lift a bar that's nearly 300 pounds off the ground, I can't afford the distractions. So really narrowing down and focusing on the task at hand does a lot for removing all of those, all that extra noise. So every once in a while, I have to go to the gym for therapy for when I'm feeling scared, for when I'm feeling unsupportive of myself, because the outside world may be very supportive. I'm very lucky that I've developed a community around me, not just of podcasters, but of friends and colleagues who are really supportive, who really believe in what it is I'm doing. But if I don't believe in myself, I need to find a way to accept that, to open that gate, to stop gatekeeping it from myself. And sometimes, most of the time, let's be honest, I find that in the gym. Because when we see incremental progress in the gym, it's a freaking win. That's a huge win. If you're just moving from a 5-pound weight to a 10-pound weight, you've effectively doubled the amount of weight you can lift. That's huge. The day I went from like 100 to 200 pounds, it didn't happen overnight like moving from 5 to 10 did, right? So we celebrate all those wins along the way. We are making gains all along the way. You had to develop that. You had to work up to that. And so I try to take the lessons from the gym and put them in my everyday life. Let's get back down to basics, which lifting weights helps me to remember.
Everything you're saying feels like I'm ready to receive it, because I think I'm at this like turning point in my life where the old stories that are on repeat are no longer relevant, and I no longer want to think them or hear them. You know, like, I'm nervous, I'm not enough, I don't belong. Those stories are what a lot of people have on repeat in their brains. But I read something recently where I received it differently, I think because I'm ready to hear it, was be your own best friend. And the soundtrack in my brain is not anything I would tell my best friend in real life. So why would I tell it to myself? You
know? Exactly. I think one of the opening lines to my TED Talk, which I'm working on, which you know, is communication skills are the key to success. But the most important conversation you are ever going to have is with yourself. And you can be successful by many traditional metrics and all these other areas of your life. But if inside your head, it is nothing but agony and hateful messages and despair, that's a really horrible existence, and you deserve better. And sometimes, you know, that's a chemical imbalance, and you go to a doctor and you test out the different remedies that you can use to help that chemical imbalance. But sometimes it's also good to start with just being nice to yourself. And I don't, you know what? Nice isn't the word. It's kind. It's being kind to yourself, because niceness is what we're aiming for, is kindness to ourselves.
Yeah, I keep thinking about a garden. And what are we watering in our garden? Is it the weeds, the negative thoughts, or is it the flowers and the lettuce and the herbs and the things that nourish us and sustain us? So I just really love that you're actively working on this in your mental space. In your day-to-day, what are other things that you do to practice this kindness for yourself?
Oh, man. And here's the thing. This is a practice. It's a journey, not a destination. Like I mentioned, I can be really kind to myself, but all of a sudden I have to level up to continue to grow, to continue to succeed. And then it gets scary. And then the voices in my head get scary. They get scared too. That's the thing, that they're scared. So they're reacting and trying to keep me safe. That's the other thing. The thing that we have to learn is sometimes the voice in your head that's telling you, no, you're not ready, is scared, and they're trying to protect you. So it's not necessarily malice, it's protection. So that's another reason to be kind to yourself, because that voice inside your head also sometimes needs the nurturing. Every day, I have to remind myself that I am who I am, and I've gotten to where I am by being who I am. And I have made mistakes, and I have learned lessons, and all I can do today is try to be better than I was yesterday. Another really great lesson from the gym is that every day is not a personal record-making day. Maybe somebody upset you or you didn't sleep well, and that all comes into the gym with you, and it just kind of takes a toll on your workout. But having that workout was better than not showing up. And maybe that day then is just another foundational day. It's a brick in your foundation that is going to help you build the bigger structure to come down the road. So not every day is a PR kind of day. You mentioned something about the stories that no longer serve or are no longer true. Way back in the very beginning, see, this was always my mission, right? One of my first 5 or 6 episodes is called Lies We Tell About Ourselves. And this is still when it was the Maker Muse.
It was
a little different. And it was all about how some of these stories are automatic. We don't even realize we're telling stories that no longer fit. Right? The example I use in that episode, and still to this day, is relevant because I still struggle with this one, is I hate fish. I don't actually hate fish. I love fish in various different kinds of ways, you know, like sushi, poke. There's a Wolfgang Puck makes an amazing brown butter fish something or other that I had once in my life and have never forgotten. What I hate, because as a child, we ate so much overcooked salmon, it must have been really inexpensive because we were not well off. We grew up eating a lot of fish and it didn't taste good. And there was bones in it. So that memory, again, I've talked about how these things can develop really early in your formative years, that stuck with me. And that idea that I hate fish sticks in my head. I don't love all fish, but I do like fish. So why do I keep telling myself this story? Why do I keep saying it out loud? Because every time I say it, it re-cements it. And I know it's not true. So again, it's a practice. I have to keep working that muscle, because the muscle that is hanging on to the story that I hate fish is very strong. It's a very powerful muscle. It could lift that 315-pound barbell. But the muscle that is saying, no, I like fish, it's still kind of under 100 pounds. So I've been working through that myself for several years.
That's a really good example, because I think it can even be those simple things that we tell ourselves that become habitual, and then it becomes part of our identity. And then we can't unravel that until years later, if we ever recognize that as a limiting belief. Because one of my things, and I think the food example catalyzed this thought in my brain, but I have told myself since college that I'm not a great cook. And so that has led to me not cooking very often. But when I do, and when I actually have the ingredients and go to the grocery store with a list, with intention, and then I make a dish and set aside the time to do so, following a recipe, I'm a decent cook. And I feel good feeding people. But because it's been so ingrained in my brain, I don't really allow myself the opportunity to explore it more because I'm like, oh, I'm more of like an eater. I let other people cook and then I'll do the dishes. You know, it's almost like I'm copping out of a good learning opportunity because it's comfortable for me to be like a little bit lazier. And I don't like that about myself.
Well, at least you recognize it. And I'll tell you this, I'm a great cook, but I wasn't always a great cook. In fact, I started a food blog way back in like 2010 called Girl Plus Fire. It's not in any way like SEO friendly. Like none of that stuff even was like, what was Google back then? You know, what it was an exploration of me trying to become a good cook. My parents, both of them have this wonderful ability to just pull stuff out of the pantry and throw something together without measuring, without worrying about a recipe. And it tastes fantastic. It tastes like home. I wanted to develop that myself. I didn't grow up in the kitchen with them. And so I forced myself to learn what I like, you know, fish or not, what flavors go well with that. And then what's next after that? And one of my favorite things to do now, 15 years later, is take a recipe. You always have to read a recipe. So here's my one little tip. Treat it like a story. So read the whole thing so that you are familiar with not just the ingredients, but the techniques that are going to be used later. The other day, my husband and I were trying out this new recipe. It was a simple pasta recipe, but it had garlic in it three different ways. And it was like a total of 24 cloves of garlic.
Ooh.
And we were like, oh, this is a little bland. Like, what could we do to improve this? And that's one of my favorite things to do. We'll do a recipe. Maybe we'll make little fixes here and there. We'll sit down to eat it and be like, what's missing? Or how would we make this next time? What would we omit? What would we add? And he was like, roasted garlic. This needs roasted garlic. And I was like, yeah, let's do that before we like reheat this next time. But that, you know, I didn't wake up one day and suddenly was able to do that. That took a lot of work. And like you, I didn't want to feel like a bad cook. I didn't want that to be my story. So I rewrote the story. And sure, sometimes it's easier said than done. But you have to first recognize it and then want it. Want it bad enough that that motivation remains and then the discipline appears.
Yeah, I almost want to write down the limiting beliefs that I'm aware of after we have this call, because it feels like something that we have to sort of unearth in order to address properly. And so maybe that'll be my Aloha Friday practice. Like, what are my limiting beliefs and how can I be nicer to myself? And I think this is going to be really interesting for folks listening to dive into their own awareness of where could they be kinder. You're definitely hitting on something that I think there's this almost like this move within just femininity in general of being empowered and feeling empowered and doing the healing. I sense this across a lot of other women-led podcasts where it's really getting to the roots of our identity and then envisioning our higher selves. And I think kindness is a core pillar of evolving into the person we want to be.
You just said something that sparked something for me. When a lot of us think about empowerment, we have all grown up in the patriarchy. That's all around us. It's like, you know, if we were fish, the water would be all around us. You can't escape it. Our ideas of what power empowerment look like might not be the outfit that fits us specifically. You know what I'm saying? Like, we are used to seeing men in power. We are used to seeing men lead. And you're talking about the femininity and female-led and women-led spaces. Our power does not have to look like, you do not have to model your blueprint of empowerment to that. There's soft power, but also you can choose to be empowered in a different way. You can choose for your power itself to feel soft, or it can feel hard, or it can feel indestructible. You get to choose. And you don't have to compare yourselves. That's another problem in our society. That's one of those toxic cultural norms I talk about, the comparisonitis with other people. Like, imagine if I, as a budding food blogger, had been watching the Food Network, where professional chefs do professional restaurant level work. I have no desire to ever work in a restaurant. I just want to be able to feed myself so I don't die. Imagine if I had compared myself to these people who went to school or have 30 years in kitchen and was like, well, I can't do that, so I must suck. That doesn't make any sense because everybody should have the basic skill of being able to feed themselves, whether that's going through a drive-thru or, you know, burning some garlic. Somewhere in the middle of all that, you are able to feed yourself. But the empowerment of being able to cook for yourself, to make a meal that you enjoy, doesn't have to look like the famous chefs on TV or in the pretty magazines. It can just taste delicious to you. And I think we have to remember that our metrics of success usually are dictated to us. But one of the things I love, I heard this in a movie one time, was that success is measured by units of happiness. And that has been life-changing because I did the rat race. I went to an Ivy League school. I had all those opportunities. I squandered a lot of them. But I ended up in positions of power. And sure, being in charge can feel good. But at the same time, it came with a lot of drawbacks and it came with a lot of politics I didn't want to have to deal with and broke me down. Didn't make me feel good. It actually made me sick. And I was like, what am I doing? What am I doing? Yes, we all need to get paid. But do I need this level of payment with this level of pain? And so when I got sick, couldn't work anymore. I had to remember that my identity as an independent woman was not tied to my financial worth. And that was a hard, hard lesson to learn because I kept comparing myself to my peers or to people who were further ahead than me or people who had not burnt out their bodies and were continuing on as leaders in this field. And I was like, but do I really want them? Do I? And if I'm honest with myself, the answer is no. So why do I continue to use that as the metric of success? Because I'm not happy. People might look successful, but are they actually? When you dig down deep, are they happy?
Yeah, I think this is a beautiful uncovering of what does happiness, contentment look like for the individual? Because in our first conversation, we had a similar story in a way where I had also experienced burnout in my late 20s and I had to redefine what health looked like and what kind of work-life balance I needed in order to feel good in my body and have good mental health. When we think of abundance and self-kindness, it's almost like we have to look at, there's this framework, it's referred to as like multiple forms of capital, where we have health capital, social capital, spiritual capital, financial capital, cultural capital. And then you could bring in the material things like infrastructure and things like that if you're looking at like cities and economies. But in our personal economy, what are those, you know, sectors that we need to be healthy in order for us to be thriving? What does personal thriving look like? And it's not just the money. It's very much, how do we feel? Are we contributing in the ways that align with our purpose? And I feel like that's very much what you're doing. And that was my first impression of you when we met in the cohort, was you are aligned, even if it's a practice, like you're on the trajectory.
That's a beautiful compliment. Thank you. Because like I said, it's life's a journey. Can we just enjoy this, please? And again, it's that practice. But thank you for putting me in that category for you, because that's really where I want to live. I do want to feel like I'm aligned with what it is that's important and I'm living that proof for other people. At the end of the day, that's the entire point of my podcast, that I am an example for you of other ways that one can be successful. And so are my guests. And that's what the topic of conversation is every time.
I would love to hear what's on the horizon for you. What's coming next?
Well, Latinas in Podcasting has an annual virtual summit. Will be taking place at the end of October. And after that, I'm looking to create a TED Talk, which is at the same time exciting and horrifying. Because again, it's that leveling up. And what's funny is a friend of mine who is a public speaker, this is what she gets paid to do. I asked her, okay, so where do I start? She goes, do a TikTok. And I was like, wait, isn't that level like 18? Don't I have to work my way up to it? She's like, Paulette, it's the launching pad. Just go. And that reframe, me thinking I had to work my way up there. But she's like, no, that's like step zero. Really helped put everything in perspective. That like I'm making a bigger deal out of this than it needs to be. So every time I go to apply for a TEDx event, I have to remind myself that I am qualified to do this. And this is not the end. This is part of the journey. This is the first step in the journey. So come on, girl, let's keep it moving.
Yeah, I fully support you. I will watch. I will listen. I'll provide feedback if you need a sounding board. I remember the first time I listened to some of your episodes, you have this natural voice where it's like, oh yeah, of course she should be on the radio. Of course she's on air. Because you know when you listen to podcasts and it's sort of like you have to adjust to how a person sounds, you have this like natural, seamless ease with being in front of a mic, and you have your little pink microphone with you, which I love.
Yeah, I love my pink mic. That is so sweet of you to say. Thank you so much, Molly, because I always wanted to be on the radio. That was actually part of the essay I submitted to Air Media.
Was it really? I had no idea.
Yes. Yes. When I was a teenager, I tried to get an internship at a radio station and I was not cool enough for them. So that's fine. But, you know, life has a funny way of meandering back to those original goals. And here I am with a microphone anytime I want. And nobody is censoring me. Nobody can tell me no. Nobody can tell me what I can and can't sing. And that's, wow, I did that.
And it's funny when you sort of just let it unfold, it will come back to you.
Exactly. Sometimes you have to let go. What's that saying? If you love something, let it go. If it was meant for you, it'll come back.
Is there anything else that comes to mind after what we've shared today that you'd like to unload?
I think the theme of your show being about what makes our heart beat is that I would love for everyone listening to re-examine whatever it is they're chasing and determine if they really want it or if they were told that that's what they should want. And if you can make a pivot that is better for you, you know, taking away all of the, what are they going to say? Or how am I going to pay my bills? You know, taking away those worries. If you could choose a different life path, would you? And I also want everyone listening to know it's never too late to start something new. Yes, if you want to be a doctor, you're going to have to go to med school. But if you wanted to take up finger painting or underwater basket weaving or learning to cook and you're what you feel like is past your prime, honey, I didn't pick up a microphone until I was in my 40s. Anybody can start at any time. And I hope that everyone listening feels like the words, it's too late, never apply to them.
Thank you. I'm going to take that out of my mental soundtrack. It's right on time.
You are right on time. You are right on time.
Thank you so much, Paulette. It's been so nice talking with you. And I'm looking forward to seeing your TED Talk and your journey unfold. Mahalo nui, everyone, for tuning in. And we'll catch you on the next episode. Aloha.